Every business has an ambition. PayPal Open is the platform designed to help you grow into yours. With business loans so you can expand and access to hundreds of millions of PayPal customers worldwide. And your customers can pay all the ways they want. With PayPal, Venmo, Pay Later, and all major cards. So you can focus on scaling up. When it's time to get growing, there's one platform for all business. PayPal Open. Grow today at paypalopen.com. Loans subject to approval in available locations.
It is week three
of you doing the podcast. Yo, you're a pro at this point. I don't know if you realize that.
So I've been watching a little bit of baseball.
Okay.
Three strikes and you're out. I don't know.
Yo, you've been hitting home runs, my girl. All right, look, here's what I'm a critique, and this is what I'll say. First episode, a double. Last episode, a home run. So you're doing good.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. I'm just going off the feedback.
So now, I mean...
And a double is solid, by the way.
A double is solid, yeah. Right. But what should I expect? Now I feel pressure.
Every time. Home run. That's what the folks expect at this point. Josh Gibson type numbers.
Okay.
Hank Aaron type numbers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I would say Barry Bonds, but, you know.
Yeah, we're not going to use that example.
Yeah. So... I don't know if I told you this, but it's my 20th anniversary from business school, and we're having a reunion. I went to some of the reunion activities last night, and it's crazy.
It's like, crazy, because you would have been in your 20s in business school, yes?
Yeah, I went at 25.
So how does that make you feel?
So it was crazy. I feel older. Like, everybody looks older, but everybody looks the same. It's like literally all the guys are just gray and balding, and thank God I'm not balding. I am plenty gray. All the women look older, but their hair is all still black because they know better. The fellas don't know no better, I guess. But it's crazy. Like, I think about business school, like, it really changed my life. Like, for me, like, education in general has changed my life.
Mm-hmm.
But getting my MBA, I just remember being a young married man trying to make sure that I could afford to have a family. And, like, I knew I couldn't cut it without getting my MBA. And just thinking about all that's happened since then, it's just crazy. I told a bunch of my classmates, I really feel like I'm living a dream. Like, literally, the thing I'm doing today is what I wrote in my essay to get into business school. And I look at them, and they're all parents and really successful executives at their companies. And it's just dope, like, seeing the impact over time of education.
That is pretty dope. And I know we're going to get into it, but at the time, were you thinking, how the heck am I going to pay for this?
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, one thing about MBAs, I will say, is that not a lot of black folks go full-time. Not a lot of black folks go period, but certainly not full-time.
Mm-hmm.
So when I was coming through, there were a lot of funding opportunities. Like, you didn't necessarily get them all, but I knew that that was a possibility. And I was thankful. I had academic scholarships for undergrad and grad school, so I didn't have to borrow a whole lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, absolutely, the cost is a big consideration. But back then, it was expensive, but not as expensive as now.
Right. And I'm going to flex for you. So you didn't just get an MBA. You got an MBA from NYU, Stern School of Business.
Yes.
So I know that was expensive.
Back then, it was $60,000 a year. Now it's easily over $100,000 a year.
2 years?
2 years.
Full-time?
Full-time. Wow. Yeah, for sure.
I used to run into you on the train back in those days. I was you are everywhere, doing everything.
I was struggling. What's funny is back in the day, you know, I was in business school. Like, I didn't have any money. So one of my homegirls, she worked for NJ Transit. And I won't, like, out her name, but, like, she used to just give me people's tickets. Like, here.
Wow.
Like, I'll let you slide. But, like, for when I'm not here, here, just take these tickets and then you could just use them. And she would literally collect a bunch of tickets and just be like, yo, here you go. And
his favorite right
that
there.
Was love, because I could not afford. It was like $300 or $400 a month for a train ticket from Jersey.
Oh, I know.
Yeah. So.
I know. Even I was working full time and living at home. And my first month of working, I had to borrow money from my mom to cover my transportation to my job.
Yeah.
Because I started on an off week and I didn't get paid for 3 weeks, so I get it.
Yeah. And what's also interesting about, like, education, so I've been, you know, obviously lauding the benefits of education. And I do believe education, I heard a long time ago, education is a sledgehammer. Like, that's powerful. Like, it really is. It has the chance to break up all kinds of rocks in your way.
Barriers.
But at the same time, it is expensive, y'all. And we're going to spend a lot of time complaining about that today, but also, like, helping to figure out how to cover it.
Yep. We're living it. We're both living it right now a little bit in a different way than we did perhaps 20 years ago when you were in business school.
Yeah. Thanks for making me feel old, by the way. I appreciate that. But now we are on this thing called the tuition treadmill, aren't we? How would you describe that treadmill, Andrea? Since you invented this term, you coined this term, you are the reason why we're doing this episode today.
You're welcome. The tuition treadmill. So my tuition treadmill right now feels like it's getting faster and it's a little bit harder for me to keep up compared to maybe 3 years ago when I was just getting on.
Yeah. So the tuition treadmill is this idea of having one kid in college and then another one on the way. And it's feeling like you'll never stop paying tuition because guess what? After college, there might be grad school. And do y'all have a deal?
I'm paying for that.
I was going to say, do y'all have a deal on that?
The deal is, and it is understood, we will fully, you need to have some skin in the game, especially once we made the school decision.
Yeah.
Like, we had to pull the young man aside and say, hey, listen, are you sure this first choice is so far above choice number two?
That's probably a lot more affordable.
It was the school itself, choice number two, was offering a lot more. Mm-hmm. So it was significantly less out-of-pocket money for the family.
What was choice number two, by the way?
It was parents' choice number two was Tufts.
Okay.
Parents' choice number two.
Okay.
Kid graduated from high school in a pandemic, so never got to see the campus. So we were like, but don't you want to go check it out just to make sure? Like, I need to know that Brown is so much better for you than Tufts that you are going to participate in funding this in some way.
Here's the issue. I mean, for one, it's called Tufts. Like, it's a great school, but, like, do you want to go to Tufts? Like, just the name alone. I'm saying,
so kid number
it sounds
two,
difficult.
Kid number two cares about the brand name of the school.
Okay.
Kid number one didn't.
Really? I thought Brown was like a brand name thing for him.
He fell in love with Brown on a visit and it was all about the open curriculum.
Yeah.
So that's the child that's.
Yeah. He doesn't want to be bound.
Like poo-pooed on Princeton because he's like.
Yeah.
They're
Who
stuck
does
up.
That? Like that's a flex right there for your kid. Like the option of being able to flex on a Princeton and be like,
Well, he also has two HBCU undergrad educated parents. So we were like, you will be applying to at least two HBCUs on principle.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be the ones we went to.
Mm-hmm.
So
did he apply to either one of y'all? And y'all went to great HBCUs, Hampton and North Carolina A&T?
Correct. He did not apply to either of those because we knew in his heart he didn't want to go to either of those.
Yeah.
So one of the schools he applied and was admitted to was Howard.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing. Never saw the campus. And I'm looking at the award money and I'm like, we could write a check for all 4 years right now as much as they were offering him.
Yeah.
And we're like, I think we need to do a drive-by.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, nope.
It's Brown.
It's always been Brown. And so we had a conversation. It's just like when we talked about the questions and the answers last time, it's kind of like, listen, we only have four buckets to pay for this. So one of these buckets involves borrowing some money and we'll help you with that, but you're going to have to be responsible for some of that. And the deal, which I think was the question you asked me, was graduate school, you have to figure that out.
Yeah.
Because you have a sister who's 4 years behind you, and she deserves the same amount of attention and effort financially and support that we're giving to you.
He ain't
without
worried about all
us he not having to work until we're 80.
Like, yeah. Y'all shouldn't have so many kids. So we're both committed parents, but I will tell you, I told my son this morning, while I'm a committed parent, I'm about to commit murder on you. My son has been just taking my stuff, like deodorant. Like, my deodorant is just gone. Like, bruh, like, how funky are you? Like, I appreciate that you want to be, you know what I'm saying, like, hygienic, but like, why at my expense?
Because he knows how much it costs and he's not trying to spend his money on that.
Lord. So let's get into this tuition treadmill before we kill these kids. And by the way, I'm seeing this flip-flop too that's happening where a lot of HBCU parents have kids not going to HBCUs, and a lot of PWI parents have their kids going to HBCUs. And it's crazy because, like, nobody loves HBCUs more than HBCU grads, and it's killing us. It's like grating on us a little bit, because my kid went and visited Howard and I fell in love with Howard. I was in there like, HU, you know, which is like, as a Morgan Bear, like, that's our competitor.
It's forbidden.
But I was on it.
Yeah.
And he liked it a lot, but he just fell in love with NYU. And that's the same thing. Like, I couldn't get him off of it. So
you're absolutely right. We feel disloyal a little bit, but it happens in their K-12 experience too. We have a lot of public school educated
like me
peers.
Yep.
And our kids go to private schools. Mm. Well, some of our kids go to private schools.
I can't stand it. That's what my kids are doing.
And it's it's a thing.
Yeah. Okay. So let me give you some stats. We'll start with some stats. Would you believe, Andre, that there's almost 900,000 students who have a sibling in college at the same time?
I would believe that.
And if you add in the students, there's another 157,000 students with multiple siblings in college at the same time. That means there's more than 1 million parents struggling to pay all of this tuition. They're on the tuition treadmill. 1 million parents.
So there may be 1 million parents who have to figure that out. I don't think they're all struggling, but we'll talk about that a little bit later.
Well, I know my black butt is struggling with it. And I don't even have, I have one in college, but he's paying the tuition of three.
So, and you're about to have two in college at the same time.
Yep. Oh, my daughter's birthday was yesterday, by the way, 17.
Ooh. Yeah. Where is the time going?
Yeah.
That's sweet. I hope she had a good time.
Yeah, she did. She did. And then here's what happened with the government. The government just be hating on us, y'all. So the government made a change called the FAFSA Simplification Act.
Mm.
They should have called it the Parent Kick in the Butt Act.
Yeah.
Because one of the major changes, they went from having what's called an EFC, which is the Effective Family Contribution. We did a whole show called FAFSA or Shasta, and we broke down the old FAFSA. They done changed the whole thing.
Yes.
And one of the—
To make it simpler.
Yeah, simpler, but at the same time to punish certain parents.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so it used to be that they would do all this math and they would calculate how much the family can afford to pay towards college. And if you had two kids in college, you cut the number in half.
Mm-hmm.
Makes perfect sense.
It's
three
logical.
Kids in college divided by three. Now I got enough for everybody.
Right.
But there were some parents who did their proper parent planning and had their kids 5 and 6 years apart who were like, why do we have to be penalized? Just because they chose to have their kids in bunches a year and 2 and 3 years apart, why do we have to pay more in tuition than them?
Right, yeah. Always going to be haters.
And I guess they had the lobbyists behind them.
Yep.
And so they changed it. And so now there's a whole new FAFSA system. And the result of this new FAFSA system is that for those parents, those million parents that have kids, multiple kids in college, they're about to lose on average about $7,900 each in aid. If you add it all up, $1.2 billion is lost in aid, lost because of this new FAFSA calculation.
That's pretty significant. And so if you think about it, if the whole idea behind the act was to make the process simpler,
mm-hmm.
that goal may or may not have been accomplished. But perhaps one of the unintended consequences, I'm being nice by saying unintended consequences.
They knew that was going to happen.
Is it's hurting middle-income families.
Yeah, and certainly upper-income families like
and
yourself.
And upper-income,
like
high earners.
Like
yeah.
y'all, like you and The Gray Household.
Hey, listen, what I heard from you is your dreams are coming true and you're a money-making machine. So I don't know if I have sympathy for you right now, other than the emotional having two kids in college at the same time.
At least give me some sympathy for my allergies. Like, the pollen is popping. Like, I sound like a crackhead right now. Like, this is not good.
Yeah, I thought you just had a late night.
No, I went to bed. Like, I feel good.
Oh, man,
I didn't take my Flonase today.
You didn't do your eye drops and the whole bit.
Yeah.
You'll be all right.
We need a sponsorship. Like, if you work for one of these companies with allergy medicines, cut the check. We'll give you the best on-air promo.
I don't know about any of that, but yeah, hey, if you don't ask, you don't get.
That's a fact. So let's keep going with these stats.
We're going to come back to that in this conversation. Remind me. If you don't ask, you don't get.
Tell me now.
I mean, we're going to talk about some tips, right, mm-hmm. to reduce our out-of-pocket costs for college.
Yep.
And one of the tips will be ask.
Ah.
When you get your award.
Tell them you got allergies. No. I was going to say, I didn't know that was going to work.
No, if you don't ask, you don't get.
No, that's fair.
And I'm jumping ahead, but when you do get your award offers from certain schools that have them, appeal.
Yeah.
Ask for more.
Cry.
The worst they can say is no.
Beg. Yeah, word.
The worst they can say
is
no.
And you're right back where you started.
And once they figure out of all the students who are admitted, who are actually going to attend, they have some more information about how much money is available.
I'm going to tell you about my ask. I went to NYU like, hey, look, bro, I got all these other schools. You know, they give big money. So I'm just saying, like, if you want my kid, you have to come up with something.
Mm-hmm.
They was like, well, go to them other schools. I mean, basically, like these, them other schools ain't us. Like, wait, what school? Oh, yeah. If you want to go there, go. It's cheaper. God bless you.
You know what? That wasn't my experience. That was not my experience. I did these two schools that are on your level offered this much.
Yeah.
And I got back. Oh, and I hit them with the wealth disparity.
Ooh.
African Americans.
Oh, snap.
The impact that COVID was
Lord
having,
Jesus.
The fact that I was an advisor in an industry where my income fluctuates. So they were basing it on my past corporate job income. And I'm like, hey, I'm not a salaried employee. So
now.
What happened in 2 years ago when you're doing the look back is not my current situation.
Uh-huh.
I put it all out there.
Take that into account.
And what they came back with was, okay, we don't do comparisons to what other schools are offering.
Mm-hmm. Same thing they said to me, but nicer.
Fine. All right, here's another $7 million.
Okay.
And I was like,
$7 million? $700,000?
$7,000.
Okay, I'll take
that. And I was like, at first I was like, $7,000? And I'm like, but wait, $7,000 times 4 years, that's $28,000, $30,000 if everything stays the same. From just asking.
And it is $7,000 a year?
Well, they can only offer that for that 1 year.
Okay. Yeah.
So
if you're like, I'm going to be begging every year. So
my point is, you don't ask, there is nothing for it to be considered. And the worst they could say is no, and you're right where you started.
That's
really the point.
No, that's a great story. Speaking of which, on average, families report spending an average of $28,000 for their kid to go to college. And that's up 11% from the year before. How do they pay for it? 40% of the money comes from savings and income from the parents.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big chunk.
Yep.
29% from scholarships and grants, including the ones that you beg for.
So that's, if you think about it, the gap between parents' income and savings and scholarships and grants is only about 10 or 11%.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I realized that it was that high of a percentage.
Yeah. Well, not everybody gets scholarships and grants. You know,
also
for example,
true.
I'm raising my hand right now angrily. Mad at the world, ready to flip this desk over. 57% of families get grants. 75% of low-income families get grants. And 68% of first-gen college students get grants. And
So do you feel like we are penalized because we're not first-generation? How do you view that?
Look, I'm not penalized. I mean, like, I'm blessed that my dad went to college.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? I went to college. Like, I'm blessed to be in that. So I never feel penalized, but, you know, I'm mad.
Right.
Like, I'm still black. Like, I'm just like, when I think about, like, my kid's school costs $94,000 a year. I'm like, we are just extracting money from the black community, like, and giving it to like a white institution. And I'm like, yeah, it's a liberal institution. Yeah, like they've done a lot with diversity and like they're not locking their students up for protesting the Israel-Palestine conflict. Like, yeah. like they're socially where I want it to be, but I feel some kind of way having to pay all this money. But at the same time, I know I'm the beneficiary of a lot of generosity. Like at my scholarship, somebody paid for them for grad school, for undergrad. So I'm just paying it forward and I'm mad and I'm going to complain and I'm just going, that's it.
Yeah. No, I get it. I get solicitations from the parent fund at the university where my son attends. And I'm like, talk to me after he's matriculated and graduated.
Because
I'm still trying
out?
To figure out how we're covering next year. So
when you throw that in the garbage, are you doing Kobe, like ball it up like Kobe in the trash? Like how you throwing it out?
So it's coming in an email. So
okay. Delete.
And sometimes
spam,
a text message and
block.
A phone number. And so finally I took the call and I said, hey, I appreciate what you're doing and I appreciate the money that you have. I've been a beneficiary of this money, but I won't be able to contribute to this until I'm done needing it.
Yeah. And so, they're gonna keep hitting you up.
Oh, they are. They're just not going to call now. It's just going to be the... And I will.
Yeah.
I will do that, but...
But at the same time, is it you that's going to be giving to Brown? Or is it your kid going to be giving to Brown? Like, why they hit me up?
Yeah.
Like, I'm not getting this degree.
It's the parents' fund. Well, he should. First of all, but if we go on to graduate school, he may not be in a financial position to do that.
Yeah.
Okay. So we'll find other ways to give back.
Fine.
Yep.
We're talking about the tuition treadmill today. We're having a little bit of fun, but we are going to break down how the FAFSA works moving forward and also give you guys some tips. We know that college is expensive, but we got to figure out the ways to get through this because we're on the treadmill. You can't put the kids back up in here like they're here to stay.
Right. So one of the options is get off the treadmill altogether, and we're not sure that that's the best option. So
correct.
We'll talk about how to navigate it.
I'm Alan Boomer.
Andrea Gray.
And we are the Momentum Advisors.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
When we started writing our thoughts down on paper, it opened up endless possibilities. Ideas could grow beyond the borders of the mind, and it changed the world. Somewhere along the way, we lost touch with paper, distracted by devices made for every purpose except for thinking and focus. On edge, waiting for the next notification. But what if new technology didn't pull us away from paper, but brought us closer to it? Listen. That's not paper. It's the sound of the new Remarkable Paper Pro, rewriting the future. A paper tablet with a true color ink display, gentle reading light, and unheard of tactility. With digital features for taking notes, thinking, and organizing, without any distractions. Paper is about to change the world again. Get your paper tablet at Remarkable.com today.
Momentum.
We are back.
We are back.
We're talking about the FAFSA.
Thank you for saying it properly.
I said it wrong. Did I say it right? I was trying to say it wrong on purpose.
No. Oh, you were trying to say it.
I was trying to. It's FAFSA. Wait, it's Free Application for
Federal Student Aid.
FAFSA.
Yes.
And what's the wrong way?
It's just a pet peeve.
What's the wrong way? So FAFSA.
It's FAFSA. And a lot of people tend to say FAFSA.
Yeah.
I don't know why it bothers me.
That's why Tiffany called it the Shasta. That's what we called it, the Shasta.
That's more fun. That's more fun. But yeah, it's one of those things.
Yeah.
Ask instead of ask.
Oh, ax?
Specifically and not specifically.
Oh, Lord.
Conversate is not a word. Mm. It's converse.
Yes. Yo.
I'm a grammar geek.
I love you.
I don't get everything
right. I don't get to say this enough. Yo, you feel my pain.
I don't know why these things bother me.
Oh, my God. It bothers me so much.
And I don't judge with it, but it bothers me.
Axe really is, you might as well take an axe to my head. Like, you may as well just do that.
I can't do it.
Yeah.
Let's get back to the subject at hand.
We're talking about education. That's part of it. And education is failing a lot of y'all out there. But what's funny, have you noticed, though, that your phone is programmed by people that aren't good with grammar? Like, your phone is correcting you in wrong ways?
Correct.
Like, they need these tech people to take some English classes out here.
It's yes.
Yeah.
That also bothers me.
It's like, you're correcting me incorrectly, my guy. Like,
correct.
And you're supposed to be a smartphone.
Right.
Like, you need to go to college, phone.
Listen. We are of a certain age where we know, we were told garbage in, garbage out.
Facts.
So.
Yeah. Okay. So we're talking about this tuition treadmill. So I'm going to breeze through a couple of things. 61% of families use scholarships to pay for college. I'm unfortunately not in that percentage. Although my kid did get a bunch of scholarships, he just said no to all of them because they were at schools he didn't want to attend. And that happens. 39% of kids got no scholarships. And for a bunch of them, they didn't even apply for scholarships. And we at least applied for stuff. But like, a bunch of people don't apply because 29% thought they couldn't win. 46% didn't know there were scholarships. 19% thought the application was too hard. Now, that's when you want to fight your kid. Like, did you ever ask your kid to fill out scholarship applications? And they're like, nah, it's too much.
No.
Yeah.
That was not allowed.
That doesn't happen in a black household, or at least it shouldn't. And people should still apply because there's a lot of scholarships and grants that you don't have to have financial need for.
And there are scholarships that are not tied to the school specifically. So while I celebrate when you hear this time of year, this student was awarded, you know, $1 million in scholarships. It's like, but if most of those were coming from specific schools, mm-hmm. like, you can't use all of that. It's
but
not
it
like you
receive.
It sounds
it good.
Sounds good. It sounds good. But it's like, what you really want is to go for the scholarships that are not uniquely or solely tied to the school, because that's really how you're going to get your out of pocket cost reduced.
Yeah, that's a fact.
Yep.
So apply. But also, you got to fill out the FAFSA, and we should break down how the new FAFSA works as
you
well.
You absolutely have to do it. I know we're going to get into how the FAFSA works, but I'm going to jump ahead to a tip mid-show.
Yeah. Okay.
Which
Ooh,
is
controversial.
This.
Controversial.
You
like
have
it.
Got to apply. So a lot of people don't apply for mm-hmm. federal aid because they believe, and they're usually correct, that they're not going to qualify. They earn too much.
Mm-hmm.
And I get that. Why waste time doing something that you know you're not going to benefit from?
Mm-hmm.
But what the short-sighted view on that perspective is that sometimes, oftentimes, the award money that you might receive from a specific college or university is based on information that you provided through the FAFSA.
Mm-hmm.
FAFSA. So if you haven't done that, you're not even eligible to apply for money from the school itself.
That's a fact. And 30% of families don't fill it out.
Right.
At all.
Yeah.
And so, to your point, they can't give you an award at all. They just got to know. It's not that you got to be broke. They just got to know what you got. And if you don't, they don't have any idea what you have, then they can't even contemplate giving you that money.
Yep.
So, speaking of which, so they changed the application process this year. They made the application shorter. It used to be 100 plus questions. Now it's only 36 questions.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds like 36 chambers of death. Wu-Tang. They also delayed the launch. So initially, it usually is out in October. It's now out in late December.
Mm-hmm.
But applications, even though they made it simpler, applications are down about 38%.
Change is always complicated. So even if it's change for the better, and I'm not saying that it is, I'm not here to defend the government.
Mm-hmm.
But even if you think about it, even some of the things that we're doing now to make things better, even as a firm, change is still hard.
Yeah.
And so those of us who have experienced the previous form of the FAFSA and now have to get used to something new, it's just harder because it's different.
Did you guys do your FAFSA already?
No.
See?
Financial advisors are the worst. What happens is we tend to file our returns on extension because we're busy helping y'all figure out how to pay your taxes.
That's a fact. That's a fact.
And so we sometimes, to help you, don't help ourselves. So I've not started that process, which is terrible.
The cobbler's kids go shoeless.
You went there with the cobbler.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The eye doctor's kids don't have glasses.
Stop. No. The shoemaker or the cobbler's kids have no shoes. The baker's children have no bread.
Oh.
It's that. Yeah.
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 All that.
You were trying with the eye doctor, though.
Yeah.
That's funny.
Well, speak for yourself, because I also didn't do my FAFSA.
We haven't done it yet.
Yeah. That's a fact. And my taxes are an extension. You are absolutely right.
And that's what it is.
Okay. So let's walk through some of these changes. So number one, everybody involved has to have a FAFSA ID or FSA ID. It used to be that the kid and one parent could do it, but now we need everybody involved in the mix. And the crazy thing is, if you're divorced, like, your spouse who has nothing to do with this kid has to be a contributor to this FAFSA process as well.
It takes the village.
That's going to create some fights in some households, for sure.
I'm sure it has already.
Because they also changed it where even if you are the non-custodial parent, I'm just going to call it the dad, just to make life simpler. Not that dads never get custody, but we know it's not as common. Okay?
Okay.
Okay, so let's say the dad's a non-custodial parent.
I'll allow it.
Thank you.
I don't love it, but I'll allow it.
Thank you. All right, fine. We'll flip it. We'll make the mom the non-custodial parent because she's shady.
Just call it the non-custodial parent.
No, it's the mom. She's in the streets. She out here dating.
But why do we have to define who it is?
That's fine. Okay. Let's say the non-custodial, non-binary parent.
Oh my God.
Is out there making a lot of money. The non-custodial, non-binary parent is married to somebody.
I said I'd allow it.
Yeah, I know. I'm saying, I'm keep going. So they're married to someone else, and that person is making a lot of money too. And then you've got the custodial parent who doesn't make as much money. It used to be that the FAFSA was really weighted towards that custodial parent.
Mm-hmm.
And if that custodial parent didn't make a lot of money, then the kid qualified for a lot of aid.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that ballin' non-binary couple is now viewed as the custodial financial parent for FAFSA purposes, and now it's based on their finances, not the custodial parent.
Right.
So that's going to hurt some folks for sure.
It's going to hurt some folks for sure. But so sometimes these new laws are designed to keep people from who have figured out how to game the system.
Oh, that's a fact.
Because you have families that were using the strategy to separate so they could take advantage of the award money that would go to the non-custodial parents.
Yeah, wow.
Like, that's extreme.
So separating on purpose, like, hey, I'm going to go ahead and live with Sally because then, like, listen, honey, listen. Tuition's going to be, it's going to be straight. Trust me.
Yeah. I mean,
listen,
I'm not sure a lot of people are doing that, but hey, I heard that suggested as a strategy.
Or the custody thing, like, yo, I'm going to send the kid to the less balling parent on purpose to try to, you know, game the FAFSA for sure. And speaking of gaming, the IRS is now linking up to FAFSA as a requirement. It used to be optional. Like, you could say, okay, if you want, if it's simpler, rather than filling out all these questions, you can link up your tax return directly to feed the information from the IRS to the FAFSA. And it was an option. Now it's a requirement.
So that's interesting, because my experience, the first time I filled out the FAFSA, they were already linked in some way. Perhaps it was optional.
It was an option.
But it was like,
they made it like an option that they tried to force on you, but it wasn't a requirement back then.
Yeah, and maybe I saw through that because there was a corrected tax form that was completed for me, and the university came back around and was like, hey, you need to update this.
Wow.
Like, this can't be completed until you take into account the additional income that wasn't accounted for on your original return.
Look at you shielding income.
So I was not sure.
I love it.
It was a 1099 that didn't come.
Yeah.
Yeah. I forgot about.
Yeah. I used to try to do my stuff manually.
Don't do that.
No, I did. I mean, I don't have the choice.
No, no. I'm talking about telling me I'm shielding. You can't put that out there.
No, you're right. You're an accounting major, too.
You know how I am about my reputation. We can't even say that.
All right.
It was a 1099.
I take it back, though.
I borrowed money from myself.
Ooh.
From one of my retirement vehicles.
Okay.
And
which we also tell folks not to do. Well, go ahead.
Issuing company issued the 1099 late.
Mm.
So I didn't account for it.
Yeah.
Initially, because I didn't have it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they reissued it with a higher amount.
Listen, I've been using that strategy since I was a kid. When I get in trouble, blame somebody else. All right, let's keep going. So now,
why do I talk?
I'm just messing with you, Andrea. And Andrea admitted to being churchy, by the way. I appreciate that.
I am who I am.
Yeah. So now they've got the student aid index instead of the EFC, the expected family contribution. And we should break down what the student aid index really is.
Let's do it.
Okay. So for one, here's the formula. So there's the cost of attendance. That's how much does it cost to go to this school minus the student aid index. That equals your financial need. So let's say the school costs $100,000 and your student aid index is $30,000. That means that you've got a $70,000 gap. And that doesn't mean that the school gives you $70,000 in grants, but
not at all.
But that's like the ceiling for how much help you can get in the forms of loans, grants, and scholarships.
Well said.
Is that?
No, that's absolutely well said. Some people see that and think that that's how much they're entitled to receive.
Yeah.
And that's not what it means.
Yeah, it doesn't. The student aid index can also go negative, which means there's some people that have really like an outstanding amount of financial need and they're able to get even more than what it costs to go to that school. And that for the kid that, let's say, is struggling with homelessness or in really abject poverty, I think that's a good thing.
That is a good thing. I was just going to say exactly that. That sounds like a good thing.
So we did talk about how parents with kids in college at the same time are being penalized, but at the same time, they do factor in the number of kids you have in your family. So if you have four kids, then you will have a lower, I got to make sure I'm getting this SAI right. Mm-hmm. You'll have a lower student aid index than if you have one kid.
Yep.
So they factored in.
That sounds fair.
So let's give you guys some numbers of, okay, if I make this amount, how much should I expect to be on my student aid index? Just ballpark. We'll go through the formula of how they come up with these numbers as well. Let's say we got a family with two children. Okay. And let's just say the family makes $100,000. Okay.
Okay.
The student aid index might be only $12,614. So in that example of a school that costs $100,000, first of all, why does school cost $100,000? But
why
whatever.
Does school cost $100,000?
So your gap would be your financial need would be $88,000 in that example. And again, they may tell you, well, you qualify for $88,000 in loans. Look at God.
That's what you think.
But you would hope it's $88,000 in scholarships.
Right.
Yeah. If the family probably not. If the family makes $200,000 with, let's just go up to four kids. Okay. Although I wonder if there's any correlation between how many kids are in the house and how much the parents make. Because I don't think parents think about the financial impact of the kids.
Of having children?
They just out here off of love.
Listen. Maybe it's because of the work I do, but that was definitely a thought. So there was a time in my life where I thought I wanted four kids.
Mm.
And then as each year I got older, that number went down. And I almost promise you that if my daughter was born first, she might be an only child.
That's crazy.
But something to think about. Then I learned my husband wanted to have three children 2 years apart.
Mm.
And I was like to the point where we were planning the Disney cruise and what age they would be, where they would all be old enough to enjoy it, but young enough that it still felt magical. Wow. This was literally his mindset.
So y'all were on complete different pages.
I was like, nah, we're good.
Yeah. So here's how I planned how many kids I wanted.
Mm-hmm.
Car seats, how many could fit in the car without me needing a minivan. So I was
That's
like, yo. I cannot get a minivan. Like, I'm not doing it. So what's the max that I'd be comfortable with before having to make that call? And it was three.
So you know what? That helped Alex, actually, too. Because he was like, we don't do minivans.
Yeah.
Anyway.
And fast shout out to folks with minivans. What's crazy is like,
listen, they're easier. There was a time where I was like, you know what? I don't care.
Listen, there have been like family trips we've taken and we've rented a minivan. I'm like, man, what have we been?
The doors open on their own, on both sides. The kids could climb in. Trunk space.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah, I thought about it.
Yeah.
But we only have two. At the same time,
I couldn't do it. I couldn't write that check.
We're vain.
All right. So family making 200K with four kids, 39,000 would be their student aid index.
So it makes sense. So the point really is, as income increases, there is less aid from middle and high income families with multiple children in college at the same time. The elimination of the small business exclusion also has a big impact. So we're going to talk about that.
Yeah, that's a fact. Yeah, there's a lot of different things. There used to be like all kinds of loopholes that they're just getting rid of, and small business is one of them.
Yeah.
Like it used to be, for example, if you had a small business like Momentum Advisors, like a company with less than 100 employees, they didn't even factor that in. Like, what's the company worth? None of that. Yeah. Now you got to put something down. And same thing for farms. If you had a farm-based business, didn't have to factor it in at all to your assets, and now you got to put it in.
So let's jump into the differences in the formula today with the new FAFSA compared to the previous version.
And if you are driving, this might be one of those times to pull the car over. Take out a notepad, okay? Type it into your phone, perhaps. This is important stuff. So let's just get into the calculation of the student aid index. Here's the formula I want y'all to think about, okay? 25% of that index is based on the parent's combined gross income. That's actually one of the biggest factors on the parent side is your income, and 6% of the parent's assets. So 25% of income, 6% of assets. So just to, you know, let me just humor me. I'm just going to make up an example real quick. Let's say that we've got a couple, a heterosexual couple in this example. We already did a non-binary couple. So heterosexual couple, they make $200,000. And let's say they've got $1 million in the bank. Okay?
Okay.
All right. So that means that their income contribution would be $200,000 times 25%, which is $50,000.
Correct.
Did that all.
The math is mathing in the morning.
Plus, they have $1 million in the bank. So 6% of $1 million is $60,000.
Also correct.
So their student aid index might be $110,000. But what if that whole $1 million was in their retirement account?
Now, that's what I'm saying. Because when you said $1 million in the bank, the accountant that I am was like, I don't know if I want to have $1 million in the bank. I wouldn't mind.
Yes.
But I might. I'm okay with $1 million in assets. But $1 million cash in the bank, you paying.
Yeah, that's a fact. So in the first example, the couple had $110,000 student aid index, meaning if the college costs $100K, and their student aid index is 110, guess what you're not getting is grants, scholarships, and loans. Like,
not getting them.
So if the $1 million is in retirement accounts, that whole 6% of the assets kind of goes away. And now we're really just focused on the income.
But do they? Because that was one of the issues I had. But we're talking about the new FAFSA, right?
So yeah, it's the new one.
My experience is, because I didn't do it yet this year, my experience is with the old one. So I'm being educated while we're educating you about this at the same time.
I love it.
Because I was like, why should you count my retirement assets? Because if you're expecting me to use some of my retirement assets to pay for my child's education, when am I going to get that back? You're not giving me that back.
Yeah.
So I have to figure out how I'm going to, if you're going to use those assets as something that I should be using towards paying tuition, then I'm doing generationally speaking, I'm doing myself a disservice.
Yeah. So with the old FAFSA, they asked about it, but they would segregate into the calculation the retirement assets.
Right.
Now, you got to also remember there's other calculations being made. Schools are making their own calculations. States are making their own calculations.
Also true.
The FAFSA is a federal thing. And they're asking for stuff, and all of it doesn't get factored into that calculation.
That's it.
But they want to know. For example, one school asked me what kind of car I drive. Like, what year, make, and model of the car.
Yep.
Like,
I had that.
Why do y'all want to know that?
I had those questions. The whether you were financing, leasing, how much the monthly payments were.
They wanted an Omega model. Like, y'all are judging right now. Like, so what? I'm in a foreign.
I added that to my appeal letter, by the way. I was like, I don't have a car note right now, but I'm going to have to buy one.
Yeah.
While he's matriculating. So while you're taking that into consideration, there will be a purchase of a vehicle.
Got it. Thank you. Going back to that formula, so the couple that has more money in retirement assets has a lower student aid index. So in that example of the couple with $200K, $1 million in the bank in retirement account, their student aid index is only $50,000. Now we've got to add in the student part. So 50% of the student's income gets factored in, plus 20% of their assets gets factored in. So now we're talking about a much larger impact if the student has assets and if the student has income.
Right.
So
that's tricky, right? Because what student has assets and income?
Okay, I'll tell you who. What about the parent that's like, hey, I want to give money to my kid and I'm going to put it in their name?
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of parents that like to do stuff like that.
But why would they do that?
Some parents,
they want it out of their name because they're trying to accomplish something.
Yeah, they might be working on their estate.
Yeah.
Right? They got a bunch of money that they don't want to have a big estate bill one day, so they're gifting money to their kids. Like, it's really hurting you on the FAFSA.
Yeah.
The 529 is one of those assets that is counted on the parent's side.
Correct. It's not. That's really where I was going. Yeah. Like, that counts as the parent's assets, not as the student's assets.
Yeah.
We get that question a lot.
But we should get into some of these cheat code things, too. Because we got so many of these things. Y'all read about the FAFSA. It's changed. You know, a lot of the changes are going to hurt you, but some are going to help. But we'll get into the different advice items because I think that's really what folks want to hear about.
I think so too.
Let's go to break and we'll come back with some tips.
All right.
I'm Alan Boomer.
Andrea Gray.
And we are the Momentum Advisors. It's the pathway to freedom that's leading to the North Star.
Thank you so much for listening to the Momentum Advisors Show. This is Sean King, founder and CEO of the North Star. If you want to hear more shows like this, featuring black and brown voices on the most important issues of the day, head over right now to thenorthstar.com to discover all the podcasts we have to offer. We have over 500 different episodes from 6 different podcast series, and they're all great. Check them out.
We are back. We're still on that tuition treadmill, y'all.
We are still on it.
And we ain't getting off no time soon.
No, you and I are not. Can't speak for anybody else, but I'm not quite halfway.
Yeah.
And you're not at all. Mm-hmm. Sorry.
I'm angrier, though. I will tell you that.
I refuse to be angry.
Yeah.
I just keep telling myself that. So I'm a glass half full girl kind of girl. But I'm a realist. So I often like to say I'm an optimistic realist or a realistic optimist. And it probably depends on where I am, what I'm dealing with in the moment. But it's optimism, but it's rooted in reality.
So
I'm not angry.
All right. Here's me. I'm optimistic, rooted in sarcasm.
That is fair.
That's me.
The optimism, again, I don't give too much weight to horoscopes and zodiac signs and all that, but Pisces, we're sensitive people, but I think we're also hopeful people. So that's where that comes from. I get it. That is the difference between you and me.
And I'll allow it. All right. So let's talk about, so I know we've been killing.
I play a lawyer on TV.
We've been killing the student aid index, but I will say that they did raise the eligibility for Pell Grants. When I say raise, meaning they did make changes that are going to result in a lot more people being eligible for Pell Grants. For example, now it's just based on the poverty line and a multiple of the poverty line. So for example, if you have a family of 6 and that family makes $100,000 or less, $102,000 or less, you actually could qualify for a Pell Grant. And like just the concept of a 6-figure family, of course, I said family of 6, but a 6-figure family getting a Pell Grant may not have been a reality years ago. And that's going to be a good thing.
Yeah. And I think it's fair to give some consideration to how far that $102,000 has to go.
Oh, yeah.
It just the more people that you have to cover, just the less you have available for everything.
Yeah, that's a fact.
And that feels fair to me.
Yeah, I'm not mad at that. And the Pell Grant is big. It really helps a lot of people. The maximum Pell Grant is $7,395 a year. And that is very helpful, depending on where you're going to college, for sure. So let's get into these tips. I want to tell y'all a story real quick. This is a real live example. So one of our partners at the firm, his kid just got admitted to a wonderful college in California, University of California, San Diego.
Yes.
And the partner's kid is an amazing athlete.
She is.
But not every school has a lot of money set aside for every athlete to get a scholarship.
And not for every sport either, but.
And even though you're a scholarship recipient, they also look at your FAFSA.
They do.
They look at your financial need, your student aid index.
They do.
And that factors in. And so while he's super happy to send his kid to this high-priced college across the country, he also has to, you know, he's a high-earning individual. I mean, hey, he works for Momentum Advisors. Like Andrea, he's making some good money.
So Alan already told y'all he's a money-making machine, and he's telling another partner's story. Just taking control of my own narrative. I've never said I was a money-making machine. And as of today, I am not a partner. I'm just saying.
Okay.
That's not me negotiating in front of our listeners, but I'm just taking control of my own narrative.
Yeah. Well, you keep on doing well and you're on your way, big kid. All right. Keep up the good work. All right. So his idea is that, because he's got to pay a big chunk to tuition in California. He came up with this idea and I'm like, yo, this might not be a bad idea. He is planning to emancipate his kid. His kid's going to move to California, and every state's going to be different. Mm-hmm. And look, I think psychologically, like, I would have a problem telling my kid that I'm no longer your parent, like I'm no longer responsible for you, like I'm cutting you off. But for him, it does a couple things. Number one, it removes him from the FAFSA. Now it's just about his daughter's FAFSA.
Mm-hmm.
And for two, it allows her to get in-state tuition. Now, it's not easy to do it. There's a lot of steps, and it's going to vary by state, but like it's
every state is different.
It's doable. Like, it's doable. Because the funny thing is, there's automatic emancipation that happens, and these automatic things you're not trying to do for your kid. Like, here's the automatic ones. If your kid gets married, becomes a parent, joins the military, is homeless, like, those are things that, okay, I don't want to put my kid through those.
It goes back to, what are your goals?
Yeah. But also, like, here's the cheat code. If your kid's in grad school, then that would be one of those things that automatically becomes an emancipator for certain schools and states. Now, what if your kid's in a 5-year program?
That's, yes, true.
They might be able to cheat code themselves out of the parent being on the FAFSA.
Can we call it something else?
Cheat code? You don't like cheat code?
I don't like cheat code.
What would be another way?
I don't know. I haven't come up with it yet. So.
Okay.
Hack. I should have come up
How
with it.
How about a hack?
Okay.
Hack.
Yes.
Tuition hack.
Yeah. Okay. I'll allow it.
Okay. All right.
We think we're attorneys now.
Yes. So I'm just going to break down California just because this is what I know about because of his struggle and journey and his hack. So because some states you can do this at 18, some at 21. But here's the steps in California. Number one, you've got to be continuously physically present in California for at least 366 days before you can start to say that I'm emancipated.
A day in a year.
Yeah, it means you got to be.
A day in a year. Yeah, that's right.
That's right.
I said it.
Even when you make mistakes, you're on point. Even when you think you make mistakes.
Numbers don't lie.
You didn't. So you got to be continuously in that state. But that word continuously means you really can't be going home a lot. I mean, that might mean no Thanksgiving. That might mean no summer break at home. So they do say you can go home for 30 days, but if you make it to 6 weeks, then the whole thing starts over. So that means definitely no summer, but you could probably go home for Thanksgiving, Christmas, and maybe Easter.
Right. So one of the things we talked about when we were having this conversation was, are they really tracking that? But think about it. Everything we do is being tracked.
Lord.
You check in one place. A social media post, oh, I just love the holidays. It's great to be home. And it's like, you've been there for 2 months.
Yo, I met an accountant. I was at a conference this week. And he has this app he talked about. I think it's called Tax Bird or some kind of something bird. And it just physically tracks where you are. So like when you're trying to say that I'm a resident of this state for tax purposes, it tracks where you spend your time. And for a lot of these places, it's not that you have to be in that state, it's that you can't be in another state for X amount of time.
Right.
So maybe there's an app to track it. Because you want to be able to prove that you were there. And here's some of the ways that you prove it. You've got to register to vote in California. You got to designate the California address for all your legal matters. You need a driver's license. Within the first 10 days of arriving, you have to get your driver's license in California. So it's almost like you have to say that I am really intending to live in this place. And I'm proving it from day one when I get here.
You got
to
do all the things.
Register your car. You have to actually work in California. So this is now where we get into some hacks.
Mm-hmm.
So his daughter's a student athlete. And there's this new thing called the NIL, name, image, and likeness situation in college sports.
Yeah, it's manifesting itself in so many different ways. It's the new hack.
It's the way for a college athlete to get paid. And so as a business owner, he's like, look, I'm just going to sign my daughter to a NIL deal.
Mm-hmm.
And that gives her California income. Box checked.
Yep.
You have to surrender all your out-of-state ID, and you have to establish a permanent home in California where your stuff is going to be.
It's going to be there anyway, right?
All reasonable.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, why not, if your kid is going to some high-priced school out-of-state, why not look into this emancipation stuff? Make an emancipation proclamation in your own family.
So, I would say it's worth looking into, but you have to decide if it's really difficult or easy to actually do, because I think some people will look at all this and say, I ain't doing all that.
Word.
And that's fine. But you have to at least explore it to see if it makes sense for you and your family.
Yeah. Because this out-of-state tuition, like, it's high.
It's high. And so the thing I'm dealing with my own younger child is the out-of-state tuition price cost increase potentially worthwhile for the school that we're attending.
Yeah.
So there is a public state college that is high on her list. And it's like, what are you getting out of this education that makes it worth what we're going to have to pay out of pocket that maybe you could get from another better known, better performing school? But there's so much that goes into the college decision that it's not just about money, but we're still going to talk about money because that's what we said we're going to do.
So the crazy thing is, like, we're having such a good time today. We are, like, out of time. Like, we got, like, a whole, like, lot of stuff to go through. We should do Tuition Treadmill Part 2. What do you think? Next week, keep it going? If you're back next week? I know that look. I know that look. So Quieta just kept me and Andrea have a three-episode guest host
like informal deal.
Handshake.
Yeah.
And so there'll be some intense negotiation.
You
this
did
week.
That on purpose. You were like, let's do this one. Let's go into so much detail that we're gonna run out of time and we're gonna have to do a second half.
Yeah, because one thing I really want to get through, like, there we have a list here of, I'm gonna call them designer colleges, that
we skipped over that
are so well paid, like they've got such a big endowment, so many people paying full boat to go to their school, that if you've got a financial need, they will make sure that you don't have any loans or very minimal loans.
Right.
And these might be some colleges that your kid's not even thinking about, but they should.
Right.
And so we'll leave on a cliffhanger because we want to give that list.
We have to get into that. Yeah. I think people need to know that. And we're in decision-making time, right?
Word.
So because of the delays with the FAFSA and because announcement day, what do we call it? Commitment day?
Mm-hmm.
May 1st?
Yeah.
Why am I drawing a blank? I don't know.
Decision day.
Mm-hmm. Yes, decision day. Keep it simple.
I've decided to take my talents to Howard University.
Have you?
I mean, that's the kind of announcement they give me.
I'm like, is that what we're looking at? No, but seriously, some people's decision day is being delayed because of the challenges with FAFSA. Mm-hmm. And it's difficult for some families to make that decision without knowing what their aid situation is going to be. So we're doing a part two because of FAFSA.
Mm. And I might be in this studio by myself, but I hope to have Andrea back next week.
I think we can do a part two.
So listen, we've had some fun today. We're talking about the tuition treadmill. And if you're on it, We're not saying get off, but we're going to keep going with the tips and the tricks and the hacks.
The hacks.
Of how to make strategies. It a little bit more manageable.
Yes.
I'm Alan Boomer.
Andrea Gray.
And we are the Momentum Advisors.
Every business has an ambition. PayPal Open is the platform designed to help you grow into yours. With business loans so you can expand and access to hundreds of millions of PayPal customers worldwide. And your customers can pay all the ways they want. With PayPal, Venmo, Pay Later, and all major cards. So you can focus on scaling up. When it's time to get growing, there's one platform for all business. PayPal Open. Grow today at paypalopen.com. Loans subject to approval in available locations.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed's sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now. And support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.